episode 244.
Let me just say this. I think the answer is yes. If you can specialize and you can really own that market and you can really be an expert in that market, it's probably beneficial to specialize. But the downside of that is take Audi and Volkswagen, take Dieselgate. There are a lot of Audi and Volkswagen leaving the market right now. And so if I specialize just in Audi and Volkswagen, many of us have taken a hit in that regard.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Welcome, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriotto here, and I want to take this moment to thank my worldwide listeners, especially the ones in Spain, France, Germany, Japan, and Australia. And of course, my friends in Canada. Hey, thanks for your listenership. Today, the interview, episode 244, is with Brian Sump from Avalon Motorsports. This episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus. For serious technical training and support, online, on-site, and on-demand, Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Find out more at fmgarageGurus.com. Hey, the network builds every week. I'm honored to make so many connections like new Facebook friends Mike Dimas, Richard Falco Jr., and Brady Kessler, and my latest LinkedIn connections, Robert Henderson and Thomas Ernst. Welcome, team, and don't forget about subscribing to my YouTube channel where every Town Hall Academy is there in full HD quality. You know, I'm amazed at all the places you can listen to the Aftermarket's premier podcast. Places like Apple Podcasts, formerly iTunes, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, Spreaker and Stitcher Radio, and also on TuneIn.com, Podbean, and Player.fm. You also have my very special app available free at the iOS and Android store. Just search for Remarkable Results Radio. You know, the interviews are everywhere in the digital realm, and I'd love if you subscribed to any one of these sites. Hey, please don't forget all Town Hall Academies are being released as podcasts. Yeah, find them on your favorite subscription services I just talked about or on the episodes page on the RemarkableResults.biz website. Hey, now meet Brian Sump, owner of Avalon Motorsports and Urban Garage in Denver, Colorado. Brian played pro football, and after his career, he found his passion as entrepreneur and automotive shop owner. In this interview, Brian gives you some great insight into the workings of his shops. He talks about our industry, his other businesses that include a luxury rental car business, a candy store, and a cybersecurity company. Brian is also co-founder of Transformers Mastermind for multi-shop owners. His one shop is a Euro specialty, and his other works on all makes and models. He says they complement each other. He talks about his customer value proposition, why process improvements are critical to efficiency, and among other important talking points, he says you need to network up and down. Now, what he means is you need to teach what you know and learn what you don't. Brian makes some very strong points for you on the future of our industry, diplomacy, and his company mission. He also talks on how Amazon is taking the relationship out of every transaction and that he says there's an opportunity for every business there. Brian also sees some analog tendencies with the newest Generation Z that could signal a trend reversal in the value of relationships. Now enjoy the Remarkable Results Radio interview, number 244. Here's Brian Sump. A warm welcome to Brian Sump, Avalon Motorsports, Denver, Colorado. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Carm. How are you? Good afternoon. I appreciate you having me on.
I'm great. You know, we had a great call before we actually turned on the mics here, and you told me about your path less traveled. You played pro football after college, then you buy an Audi, and you want to do some cool things with it, and you wanted to have some upgraded parts, and you bumped into a company called Avalon Motorsports, and that's the one you own today. How'd that all happen?
You know, I have a love for cars that dates back to high school. I think it was my senior year. I had purchased a Volkswagen, a little GTI, like a 1991 or something model, and put some lowering springs on it, upgraded the exhaust, and kind of had a new affinity for making a car my own. I think many of us share that passion in the industry, customizing and such. So fast forward to 2004, just per your story, I was playing football. I had purchased my first Audi and wanted to do some performance upgrades on it. So I came home from football for the off season, latched on to Avalon Motorsports in the shipping department. It was a very small company. I think there was three or four of us, but you know, I was able to purchase the parts for my car at cost and make a little bit extra money on the side. And so that's how I became acquainted with the company. And in spring, I think it was February of 2007, God had called me away from football to retire. And I asked myself a question, what would I love to do if I had already achieved my first dream job, which was football? I think many people aspire in the sports world to play professionally. And I was blessed to be able to do that. So I said, well, what would be my second love? And, you know, clearly the answer was cars. So I bought out the previous owner, whatever assets were left. And the company was really struggling at that time. It really, you know, the wheels had fallen off, pun intended, I guess, but it's true. Yeah. And so I spent 6 months doing that model, and things kind of evolved from there.
And you said, we're going to do service. We're going to work on high-end vehicles.
Yeah, so the story goes, again, alluding to the fact that the company had really had some challenges financially. The reputation had really gone south. So I took a name that was recognized nationally, you know, through the internet forums and through SEMA and different things like that. And I figured it might be better to have a name that was recognizable, even with a bad reputation, because, you know, people would at least be able to know and speak of it and say, hey, maybe things are turning around. But I did that. For 6 months, when I acquired the business, we were in the back of a little automotive shop in Aurora, Colorado. We had this 10-foot by 10-foot office near the alley, and I traded rent in that space for the installation of the performance parts we sold. So in other words, when I made a sale locally, suspension kit, exhaust, whatever it is, this shop would get the labor income from that customer to install the parts, and I didn't pay rent. So it was what it was.
You were almost demonstrating signs of entrepreneurialism right there.
Yeah, somebody wiser than me said necessity is the mother of invention. And, you know, so you kind of take path of least resistance. But we did that for 6 months, and I realized I really didn't like where we were at. I saw the opportunity there. So we found an industrial garage space in North Denver, and I hired a gentleman who was an Audi technician from the dealership, which ironically, Phil is still with me today. And he is now 10 years later. He runs our second store called Urban Auto Care, which is a general repair shop we've had for about 3 years. And he's a fantastic employee, a fantastic friend. And he's the first gentleman I ever interviewed and ever hired, which is a pretty cool story in itself.
Interesting. You have two stores. You didn't know anything about the business. You actually told me, hey, you know, that business side didn't come easy, and I had to go out and figure it out. So here you are, two operations, multiple businesses, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. What did you do to go out and get the training you needed to run a shop like Avalon?
You know, I've been blessed with a lot of great people and the great timing of people sharing wisdom throughout the industry. But let me just connect the dots here real quickly from that venture. When 6 months, this was probably September of 07, we moved to this little industrial garage park. I hired Phil with a salary pay and really no clients. I mean, we had some installations that were booked that have parts, performance parts we'd sold. But I told Phil, I said, you know, I don't know the answers. We're going to go find people that need service and repair for Audi and Volkswagen, and we'll figure it out. So what would happen at that time was we used QuickBooks, I think, for invoicing. But I would go back to the shop. Phil would scribble something on a piece of yellow paper, and I would run to the phone because I didn't know much about cars, honestly. And I would run to the phone, and I would regurgitate everything he told me as quickly as I could before I forgot it. And we did that for a year and a half or so. And it was archaic, if you want to call it that. It was not ideal. And then, you know, during that year and a half, we didn't make much money, Carm. We really weren't profitable. And I really didn't love what we were doing. So I went to an expo late 2009 industry event, you know, met some people that started telling me about what they were accomplishing through the industry, met some consultants who offered to help and took some seminars, and you know, kind of started figuring out, well, this could be a pretty good gig. The story goes, you know, through peer groups, consulting and traveling and seminars and reading and all those things, you know, there's a lot of information out there.
I love the story. I'm sure so many can relate to it. The really interesting thing is you didn't bring any crazy bad habits with you.
Well, I guess I didn't have any habits, good or bad. So yeah, didn't know much. Ignorance was bliss back then.
I love your website. You say in it, we're changing the landscape of the automotive industry, giving it a more refined and positive impression. It's part of your why. Pretty powerful. What is your why?
That's a huge part of my why. as we started learning basic things, basic metrics like parts margins and labor rates and some basic shop functionality, dispatch, you know, point of sale systems and how they work. Once you learn these basic facets, it became, okay, this is like a NFL, this is like a football playbook. You have, you execute these plays and hopefully you win the game. And so, but it became very, you know, basic and sort of trivial once you learn inner workings. And so one thing that I knew as an outsider to the industry is that many people don't look upon the industry in a favorable way. Customers have been burnt and taken advantage of by automotive shops. And I think, you know, you're working hard to give this industry a positive light and help shop owners. And, you know, that's much the same for me. So I took a step back and said, what would I change if I was a consumer? You know, being an advocate to advance the industry, both in terms of the reputation, how do people see? When I go and I probably visited, I don't know, hundreds of shops in the last decade or so around the country, and you walk in and, you know, many of them have, you know, a lot of us have some things to be desired in the way we appear to people and how we interact and things. So I think advocating, you know, taking some great customer service tactics in other industries and trying to migrate them in and change the appearance of how a shop looks or how a website looks or, you know, all of those things. I mean, I want that for our industry.
Culture is really what you're talking about. I mean, you probably set out to say we're going to have a very strong culture, not only to attract good people, but to keep the customers coming back.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, I mean, I say that whether it's true or false, that every has a culture. I believe that's true. Some of it's desired culture. It's what they want or what a shop owner wants. But every shop has a culture, good or bad. And so, you know, if you choose to inflect a positive culture and bring your values and your why and your processes in, then the culture can maybe be a very positive thing. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people who don't even realize that a culture exists. You know, I want to try to help those folks as best I can and make something great.
I'm talking with Anthony Frohwein, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Anthony, when you're in a shop, are you talking tech as well as product?
Whenever I do a physical training, there is product incorporated part of the whole training overall, but it's to maximize the time, whether it's diagnostics, whether it's inspection, whether it's installation. So that way they understand that, hey, by skipping that extra 20 seconds by putting on this set of brake pads and not replacing the hardware, hey, this might be the reason why that I'm getting comebacks. And usually being a ex-shop owner, I understand that the first time you get paid, the second time's free.
And so are the techs really starving for this information?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of times you have, we live in an industry where I like to say they cut the roast in half and they don't understand why, but they do it just because they've always been doing it type of an industry. So, you know, to break it through that, they've been doing something for 30 years and they see as they haven't been doing anything wrong, but it starts to open up their eyes to, hey, you know what? It wasn't necessarily wrong, but there is a better way.
So you're really talking to me about an aha moment.
Exactly.
And tell me, when you see that happening more and more from technicians that you're out with, how does it make you feel?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, you really feel like you're giving back to the community overall. But ultimately, the way I tell them, you know, I look at every single vehicle that I worked on prior to, or I had my customer, just like I'd put my family in that vehicle. I look at it as I'm keeping everybody else that much safer because the job's getting done correctly.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. At Avalon, you work on Audi, BMW, VW, Mini, and Porsche. Great to focus, isn't it, to be a specialist?
I think so. You know, and I don't know if specialization in every facet of the automotive industry is advantageous. For example, European cars, I think the people that drive them want to know that the people servicing them are experts, that they really know the cars. When you take marques like Porsche and BMW, I think especially, those drivers, they're very enthusiast-minded, They want the assurance that there's a BMW geek or a Porsche geek working on their car. And it even extends to the Audi and Volkswagen marks. So I think that it makes sense in this niche. Now, I don't know if you market yourself as a Ford specialist, maybe, let's say. In certain markets, it may be awesome. Or if you're a Ford diesel or a Chevy diesel. But I think in a general repair shop, I don't know if all the makes are it's advantageous for you to specialize on anything, but certainly in the German niche, it works for us, you know? And so I would say that there are advantages to it.
Would you ever think of putting up an Asian only shop?
Well, I know people that run Asian only. In fact, I know shops that are Toyota, Lexus only and do have a fantastic business. But even in some of those marks, there's still an affinity and attraction towards specialization. Let me back up. Let me just say this. I think the answer is yes. If you can specialize and you can really own that market and you can really be an expert in that market, it's probably beneficial to specialize. But the downside of that is take Audi and Volkswagen, take Dieselgate, right? The whole diesel issue and the lack of transparency that they had and all the recourse from that is that there are a lot of Audi and Volkswagen leaving the market right now. And so if I specialize just in Audi and Volkswagen, many of us have taken a hit in that regard. So there are definitely downsides to specialization. If that brand or that marquee, you know, takes a hit or something happens and they're producing less or whatever, you know, it can definitely affect your business when you only have a couple models to work on versus a general repair shop could make up for the fact that Saab or, you know, whatever they are, you can pick up other lines to compensate for the fact that that line is no longer in production.
What about the second branch, Urban Auto Care? You say what's 2 years old now?
We're 3 years old.
3 years. Were you ready to branch out to go to store number two?
We were ready to branch out to second store. We actually didn't know that it was going to be a general repair shop. We actually set our eyes in January of, it would have been January of 14 to maybe add a second Avalon Motorsports location. So we really were prospecting in that area, and Urban Auto Care didn't exist. The name didn't exist, but the shop, we bought a location that had been there for 20 years. And that was just a story in itself. A close friend of mine owned that store and was having a lot of challenges. He opened a second location an hour away, and that first location was having grave challenges. So I approached him. I said, I've always love this store. And if you were going to do something drastic, you know, before you do that, like shut it down or sell it, I'd love to know. And it was about 2 months later, we had a deal done and where it's about 3 miles away from Avalon. So we do a lot of cross marketing. So Carm, let's say you own a BMW but you also own a Toyota or a Ford. We can now service your other vehicles through this other brand that has some specialization. Let's call it Asian and American made vehicles. And we cross market the two. And we share a lot of the same processes and values and things like that.
Smart move then to make it domestic and Asian.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, they get an occasional German car there, but again, to your point, you asked a question earlier about specialization. Well, there's still some specialization that occurs at Urban Auto Care. It just excludes European marks, and that's where we service here at Avalon.
It's tough to take a great business and specialize it, but it's not that hard to open up something from scratch and specialized. Am I right or wrong?
I think there's two camps to that that would respond differently to that. I know consultant and industry leaders who would prescribe, if you own a general repair shop, you should send out some marketing materials that appear as though you specialize. I've been to shops, I have friends who own shops that actually, they own three or four different shops that are in a close radius to each other. One is a Jeep shop, you know, one is a Nissan shop or an Asian shop, and then one's a general shop, and they name them different things for the sake of marketing. And the other camp is that, yes, if you're going to start a shop, you may be a technician that came from, an Acura dealership or a Chevy dealership or something. You might want to start with that marquee. And so you can build yourself as an expert in those. And what we did, Carm, early on, we hired this Audi Volkswagen technician. So we portrayed ourselves as experts in those marks. Then we hired a BMW master technician and we told him, you know, we need you to be able to work on these Audi and Volkswagens for at least 6 months till we can really drum up BMW clientele. And now probably 40% of our business is BMW. So we did it a unique way where we added an expert on those makes and then marketed them. But there's a lot of ways to skin that cat, so to speak.
How much freedom do you give your people to help you run the business?
A ton. We launched or are launching a fifth business this year. I don't think any man has the means to be able to operate in his own, you know, abilities multiple businesses as the sole operator. So I do rely tremendously on people. I rely on people with great work ethic and great values.
I guess that was my segue to talk about these other businesses. Luxury car rental called Classy Auto Rentals. A gourmet candy company called Miss Kelly's Candy. What am I missing?
We're launching a network security company, a cybersecurity company this year that's in the software cloud space. That's unique in and of itself. My role is not as a solo owner or even, a 50% owner in that. It's more of potentially in an operations role, and an investor. I'll be on a leadership board to kind of launch that company. And, the fact remains, you've got to have great people around you to make these things go.
Candy, rental cars. I can see the rental car fits into what you're doing. How'd the candy start up?
Yeah, it's funny because I say, people ask me what I do. I say, well, candy or cars you pick. But it's kind of a fun thing. I was a customer. A wonderful lady named Kelly started this company out of her house many years ago. I became a customer probably the last 4 years. One day I called her to order some toffee, and she told me she wasn't really working the business anymore. She was just nannying. And I didn't really have any ideas of owning that company at the time, but I offered to help. This pattern, Carm, I will say, just like when we acquired the location that's Urban Auto Care, my primary concern was to try to help that owner and sacrificially, and it turned into a transaction. Much the same with Miss Kelly's Candies. I sat down to breakfast with her husband one day and was just trying to help them. Next thing I know, they asked if I would partner, and through some contemplation and prayer, I decided it was the right thing to do. So, opportunities come sometimes when you don't expect them. You try to do the right things to bless people and help people, and then sometimes you find yourself in a position, you go, how did I get here? And so it was fun. It's fun to do something for people, to give them something that they enjoy. Automotive service, maybe some clients like to come in to see you, and hopefully they have a good experience. But a lot of times it's broke cars, it's unexpected repairs. And with candy, you might buy it because you want it. So high probability of that.
I keep hearing you say you want to help people. And so you're the co-pastor of your church. That is another thing let's add to your areas of responsibility. And I sit here just in awe of all the things that you have going. Obviously, you must be a great leader and a great delegator, but also a person who inspires people. And that must lend itself so perfectly to being a pastor.
When you think about what a pastor is supposed to do, at least biblically, I won't get too much into that tangent here, but you're to train and equip, and so to do the work of the ministry. So you think about business, what do you do? If you want to lead businesses, you train and you equip. So part of my personal purpose statement is to really train and equip other people to achieve their dreams and goals. And so we look at it as, that skill set or that desire translates into many different facets of business, of faith, of family even. Again, I want to train and equip my children to be effective in their lives as well. And I think those two key elements can really go with you wherever you go.
Thanks for that. Any big tech advances in the automotive side that you think that could disrupt what you're doing?
Ironically, I was asked this year at the Ratchet and Wrench Conference to teach a one-hour seminar on cybersecurity and telematics. Now, I don't profess to be an expert, oddly enough, in that space. I'm meeting with Donnie Seifer. Many industry peers know Donnie as a telematics expert, president of the ASA. He happens to be across town from me, so we're going to have lunch in a couple of weeks to kind of review some things.
Tell him I said hello.
I will. Yeah, great, great man. I think the autonomous vehicles, look, we're at stage 2 autonomous right now. And to get to stage 5, as I understand it, it's going to take a lot of, there's going to have to be some big advances. And we'll get there, I think, one day, but I don't see it being in the next couple of years. So, telematics, a lot of great information out there now on telematics. I think there's already some resources for independent shop owners to take advantage of. Will it cause disruption necessarily in what an independent shop owner is doing? I mean, eventually you got to get on the horse and ride it. I don't think if you're literally not doing it right now, I don't think you've missed the boat. But, autonomous vehicles, they're still going to have moving parts. They're still going to communicate a certain way, still going to need repaired. And so there's a long life for independent shops, in my opinion.
So pay attention, stay in the know, change is good, and you'll be there. And you'll be ready when it all starts happening. Again, it won't click your fingers, and it will happen overnight. Getting back to that cybersecurity thing, you remember there was this big breach about 2 months ago? Some of my listeners called and says, hey, why don't you do a show on that? I haven't found the right expert yet that knows automotive and cybersecurity. Maybe I'm looking at him right now.
Well, funny thing, you know, they say you become an expert after so long of doing something or so many hours, but I'm spending a lot of time right now understanding what we're really going to roll out in our company, in this cybersecurity company, is hopefully to equip, you know, independent small businesses and homeowners to be able to secure their networks using software. So the long and the short is, how does this apply to automotive? You know, when you want to do over-air programming or you want to communicate with vehicles, you know, there's exposure and how vehicles communicate and where that transfer data is. So we're going to try to, we're going to be hopefully working with ASA on a solution and hopefully go into the medical verticals and a bunch of different spaces. But, you know, I don't profess to be an expert necessarily on it all, but I kind of get how it works. And I see some parallels between, you know, automotive shops and the automotive industry and how cybersecurity works.
Glad to hear everything you just said. Let's go back to the shop. You know, everything new gets old again. Any process, any system that you've improved lately to make things better?
Great question. What's really cool about that question is yesterday we have a CEO roundtable that meets once a month, and we watched a video. I forget the gentleman's name. He's becoming more famous now. They go to their factory every day and they say, how can you increase productivity by 2 seconds? What can you fix in your area? It's a really fascinating thing. So to answer your question, you know, one thing we did recently was our technicians, their files for where the dispatch happens, where the repair orders are, was closer to the service advisor area, and techs would walk all the way across the shop to get their ticket. It didn't make a lot of sense. So we moved the files at the technician location. So now the advisor walks to put it in there, and all the tech has to do is turn around and look at his ROs, for instance, and they're right there. And we also gave each tech their own parts table, and we try to get the parts distributed at that level versus techs walking to the inventory. I heard a stat yesterday that said 70% of the time of procuring from inventory in any business, 70% of that time is spent walking. So if I'm a candy company, it takes me 70% of my time to walk, get the candy, and bring it back, or to take it to shipping. So we try to go to where the techs are to, you know, to make that more streamlined, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. How smart. You know, Donnie Cipher, well, he led an academy that we did on lean processes and, you know, how to remove waste. And I recently interviewed a shop owner that is all about saving steps, all about everything in its own place, all about real sharp, if you will, butter-like processes that don't waste time. Digital vehicle inspection is an important element inside the company.
Yeah, you know, Urban Auto Care has really, we are doing it there, and we're rolling it out, I think, with Mitchell and Bolton, in that space. At Avalon, we're still experimenting a little bit. We use RO Rider. I don't love that the shops don't use the same point of sale, but it's just the cards we're dealt. And we're still kind of experimenting here with that. But I do believe it can be an efficiency of scale. There are some drawbacks with it, I think, but it's a very good resource if you use it correctly.
You have a compelling customer promise to them?
I think so, yes. And it kind of falls into, I would say, two buckets. One is your mission and your stated mission, what you're trying to accomplish. We say at both of our stores, our mission is to create an uplifting automotive experience. And the reason we chose that is because many times people leave a repair shop feeling let down, whether the car wasn't serviced properly or the technical aspects weren't done right, or they felt there was no trust, the advisors weren't friendly, they had to spend money and they didn't find value in it. So our goal is to make that uplifting. You know, if somebody comes in and spends $3,000 on their car, they should want to leave telling friends about how great of an experience it was. So that's one bucket. And I would say the second bucket is, you know, what's your unique selling proposition? How do you differentiate? And, you know, at least at Avalon, it's threefold and it's very simple. You know, we have factory trained technicians. We offer a 3-year, 36,000 mile warranty, and we offer complimentary rental cars during your service. And so, you know, I guess that's promises, and we deliver on those.
Your customers seem to love that. I saw a video, and obviously you had someone who loves you do the video, but it was very genuine. And one of the customers says, I'm a customer for life. Is it easy to make a customer for life?
wasn't it Sewell or somebody wrote a book called Customers for Life? Carl Sewell or somebody like that. And he was, I think, a dealership owner, Cadillac high-end marks in Texas or California.
But I believe you're right.
Maybe listeners might want to read that one. It's pretty good. I think it is possible. We had a fascinating conversation yesterday, Carm, about Amazon and Tesla, and primarily Amazon, though. What is trying to remove customer interaction from the equation? In my opinion, that's what Amazon really is doing. And now the Whole Foods, the acquisition. We believe, and I believe firmly, that if you study even the newest generation of people, what is it, Gen Z now? I don't know what is from 3 till 13 or 15, is analog, it seems, is coming back a little bit. People, they love checking the mail. They love getting a handwritten thank you card. I believe experience will absolutely have a place. And so those Customer for Life is if there is an experience, if there's a relationship. We all have a need in our heart for relationships. We're human beings. And I think if you remove that, you lose. I think if you provide that, you win. And those are the people that are going to come back when there's a relationship. They're going to come back for a long time.
I've never seen so much going on with record albums, vinyl. Amazing, huh? How stuff's coming back?
It is. Yep. And who knows when A-Track may be in there too.
I just can't wait for those leisure suits and bell bottoms.
Well, I'd hold your breath or don't hold your breath. I don't know what to say about that. But
where are you getting your big ideas, Brian?
I think we all need to be networking up and networking down. And I don't know if I've ever heard that before. It's a way for me to summarize. You know, you ought to be a part of groups of people who are smarter than you, and you ought to be going out and teaching other people how to do things, whether you mentor at your vocational school, or whether you're pastoring a church, whether you're teaching Little League baseball, whatever. But you got to find resources, whether there are mastermind groups, whether there is a peer group, a 20 smart group, whether there's a expo, and you got to network, and you got to go meet people and find out what people are doing. You got to listen to Remarkable Results Radio. You got to read Ratchet and Wrench Magazine. You got to be plugged in. And I will say, I don't want to short my staff. I want to compliment my staff. Because, and in fact, I just wrote an article for Ratchet and Wrench this month that was about getting through the tough times. And one of the things that I stated in there are some wonderful peers and coaches and family that have come around me to encourage me, but there's also some wonderful friends and employees who have said difficult things at difficult times or challenged me in ways that, what do they call that? The my way or the highway approach, or your sacred cows, so to speak, and they challenge them. So employees come up with some fascinating ideas if we'll let them.
You got to be a pretty self-assured leader to, number one, listen to that. Number two, do something positive with it. Number three, not go crash your world. Number four, not fire the person who gave you that that Dutch uncle talk. You meet that criteria?
I don't know. I think if you ask my staff, they could probably answer that question. But listen, diplomacy is a weird thing. When I say weird, it can be sometimes it's inherent, sometimes it's practiced. Sometimes it's not done at all. Diplomacy is just a byproduct of, either you want to involve people. And I'm not trying to get political here. I don't want to go that route. But diplomacy and involving people and being willing to change and adapt and grow kind of is a conscious choice, I think. There are some people who will let people walk all over them because that's just the way they're wired. And there's times to stand up for things that you know are right. And you say, sweetheart, like with your spouse, sweetheart, will you just trust me on this one? Those moments. But there are also times where it's, we should use our two ears and our one mouth proportionally, so to speak, and listen and really favor what people have to share with you.
What's your legacy going to be, Brian?
Legacy, to some degree, is, well, in my opinion, legacy is what other people will say about you. You can certainly impact your legacy by the choices you make every day. I hope people would look back and say a few things. I would say that I love Jesus, and that just goes with my faith. I hope people would say that I was there for my family on a consistent basis. But I pray that, and I'm hopeful that people would say that I impacted people maybe at my grandchildren's level, two generations down, where things stick. The way you inflect your values in your family, maybe Avalon Motorsports or Urban Auto Care exist at that time, and some of the same systems and processes that we use today might still be used then because they're effective and they matter. So hopefully that I gave time for people and that I poured in genuinely into the lives of other people, and maybe maybe we did some things that were unique and pioneered, and maybe those are recognized in history down the road.
Great answer. Thanks so much. Now, besides all the other things that you do that we've talked about, you also helped co-found Transformers Mastermind with Greg Bunch.
Yeah, Greg's a very close friend. And it's been a fun endeavor.
The goal is to support multi-shop owners?
Yeah, in this particular mastermind group, that is the focus.
Having any fun doing this?
It's a great time. We just met last week, and I had a follow-up phone call with one of the members this morning, which was really cool. You know, in that setting, what inspired this, and maybe the listeners heard the interview with Greg not too long ago, but the impetus behind it was that running a single store versus multiple stores, it's different. It has a lot of different challenges and unique sets of circumstances that we have to address. And I think it's a ton of fun because you're taking best practices at a single store level can certainly make one store great. And I'm not telling anybody that they have to have multiple locations to even be a bona fide business person, but there are challenges, and it's fun to take those guys and put them in our setting where we can draw and glean from each other and really try to perfect that craft.
Brian, the words Transformers Mastermind, why were they picked, and what does it have to do with the mission of the group?
Well, you asked me a question earlier that you read a portion of our website, and it stated to advance the automotive industry. Now, that's been there for years. That's kind of at the core of one of my whys as to why I do that, you know, why my career is in this space. But it applies to this group as well. Transformers, meaning we're transforming the automotive industry. We're transforming our own lives and our families' lives by these unique businesses. And Mastermind is actually a concept that we didn't invent. I think it came from Dan Kennedy and Napoleon Hill even many years ago. And it's really about having a peer group of peers who pour and interject into each other versus maybe a facilitator who leads a 20 group. So there's a much more averaging of your peers going on in that setting.
Hey, let's take a break from all the tough business stuff. Let me go to a bucket list. What's a place you've never visited that you'd love to visit?
Well, my wife and I, for years, have wanted to visit Australia and potentially Fiji at the time if we could. I just think it's a fascinating place. There's unique animals and creatures and stuff. So as far as destinations go, I think that'd be a fun one.
I would say that would be on my list too. If you had unlimited time and money, what would you do in life?
I think I would do a lot of what I already do. You know, I have a fascination for building things and making things nice and lovely and optimized. And I think that also translates into impacting people's lives. And so, you know, certainly my role in our church or the church setting would probably increase, but I don't think I would stop mentoring. I don't think I would stop teaching. I don't think I would stop consulting because I think that's where you get a different form of validation and a different form of being fed than you might get anywhere else. When you're sowing seeds into the lives of other people or watering the plants or whatever you want to call it, there's a form of reciprocation there that is unlike any financial revenue that you can generate or unlike anything you can build with human hands. I think that interaction piece is very special.
Something about you that no one knows.
Oh, gosh, I got a couple for you. My senior year in high school, I was one of the top four clarinet players in the state of Colorado. So how about that?
Great.
How about that? Yeah, it's crazy. I was a band geek, if you want to call it that. They went to play sports on a scholarship at an engineering school in college. So that was a path less traveled, I would say. I guess another unique thing is I was a member of the Screen Actors Guild for a number of years. We did a movie called Invincible, a football movie with Mark Wahlberg, and about 15 of us, they had violated the Taft-Hartley agreement. So we got our Screen Actors Guild membership. So I held that for a number of years, which was kind of cool. But
what's the next generation of repair shops going to be like?
I don't think that's super hard to answer in one sense. And if you look at who are the upcoming generations, study them for a while. So they're very digital per our conversation earlier. I think you're going to see things become digitized and streamlined in processes. I think that, you know, styles change, whether they're clothing styles or branding. Look at logos from now, from 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So image and impressions change, you know, but I still think that there's going to have to be neighborhood, you know, proximity locations and things like that. So the way that advertising happens will change. Look at the changes that have happened in the last 5 years. And then what is it? It exponentially increases in some of those directions. So You know, hopefully that is an adequate answer. I'm not sure that I 100% know, but nobody does.
When you think of the word successful, Brian, who's the first person who comes to mind and why?
I contemplated success, and I've had cool conversations with financial counselors about retirement and what does that mean, and does a person ever really retire, and those kind of things. But when you talk about success, I think it's really more we should use the word define success, because you can have a success, you can have goals reached financially, you can have goals reached relationally or spiritually or number of shops or whatever. So I don't know if I have one individual, but somebody brought up yesterday, Andrew Carnegie. And I don't know much about him, admittedly, but what the quote was, or somebody depicted his life by saying, he said he spent his first 30 years of his life reading, his middle 30 years building businesses and building wealth, and his last 30 years giving it away. There's something to that model. And then if along the way you spend valuable time with the people that matter most to you and for valuable causes, that might be something that I'd look to and say, you know, that's a pretty good definition of success.
Any special quotes, words to live by that kind of hang on the wall in the office?
Yeah, you know, I heard one years ago from, I don't know if this doesn't hang in my office, but I heard one from Yogi Berra, great Yankees baseball player, who is known for a lot of the funny things like it ain't over till it's over and some of these funny puns. But he said, when you come to a fork in the road, you should take it. I've done a lot of really cool things in my life, a lot of just, you know, different things. And sometimes you just come to a crossroads and you make a decision, or doors open and you walk through it, or somebody gives you an opportunity and you receive it. So yeah, that's a pretty cool one. It's not direct, but it's fun, and it kind of embodies my life.
And it's inspiring.
I guess so. For some, it's probably treacherous, but yeah, it's definitely inspiring for me.
Brian Sump, Avalon Motorsports and Urban Auto Care, Denver, Colorado. Thanks for being on the show, man.
Thank you, Carm. Pleasure.
Thank you, Brian Sump, for your great interview. I learned a lot from you, and I give you my admiration as a strong business leader and how you give back to your community in such a big way as the co-pastor of your church. I love that Yogi Berra quote, "When you find a fork in the road, take it." Love that. And I thank you for being here to listen to aftermarket leaders who are offering their wisdom so you benefit. You can narrow your listening focus with the podcast library by using the search function, the series filter, and the tag cloud. You can find every one of those options on the homepage at remarkableresults.biz. Get in on the podcast social circles. Go to remarkableresults.biz/social, and there you'll have access to all my social links. Hey, thanks for your support. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.